the method.
Ideas. Method became
unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
Without doubt. Do you call it unsound method?
I don't see any method at all.
Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Unsound Methods with me, Jamie Batcher.
And me, Lachlan Bloom.
If this is the first time you've listened, this is a literary fiction podcast where we speak to other writers about their craft, technique, motivation and history of writing. On this episode, we speak to Tom Lee, the author of The Alarming Palsy of James Orr.
We had a great chat with Tom earlier in the year in our studio in Farringdon. And talked about his move from writing short fiction to writing a novel and the struggles that entailed, and also how being in hospital had helped inform the novel.
I mean, he slightly talked about the issues involved in plundering a friend's misfortune for literary material, but that's what we're all doing, let's be honest. By the time you hear this, Bonfire Night would have been and gone for listeners in the UK. Looking at our stats on our podcast hosting company, there's people from literally all around the world. So for some of you, it's spring. So as much as I want to talk about eating chestnuts and drinking stout, it's not going to be the case for everybody. But we did recall that it is going to be National Novel Writing Month. And that's something that we talked about in our second ever episode with Megan Dunn, for whom summer is about to start down in New Zealand. And I think that's... I mean, whatever gets you writing, I think if that's a motivation to get you going, that's a good thing to get involved with. If you've been twiddling your thumbs trying to get on with a novel, why not pencil out November and just have a crack at getting one down? The first draft, at least.
If you're getting your teeth stuck into Novel Writing Month, then give us a tweet or get in touch. Let us know.
Yeah, sure. Let's know how you're getting on. It'd be great to hear from you. Anyways, ladies and gents, Tom Lee.
So, Tom, thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
If we could start maybe by talking about your route into writing and how you first started writing fiction.
Route into writing fiction, I suppose, after a lot of, traditional wanting to write and not really getting down to it, not doing anything. I suppose the thing that sort of changed things and got me sort of writing more seriously was doing an MA, which I guess is true for quite a lot of people. So I did an MA at Goldsmiths, where I teach now. And I was writing stories really for on that course and for a long time afterwards, and trying to write something longer, I guess, consistently, because everyone was saying, everyone tells you that a longer piece of work will be the, you know, is the thing that they want, the thing that agents, publishers and things want. But consistently, I seemed unable to write anything after longer than about 10 or 12 pages. Everything would just go flat. But I went down quite a lot of dead ends trying to produce something longer. And it's only sort of, the novel that was out last year is, was about sort of 18 years later than I, not quite that, I'm exaggerating a little bit, than I originally planned. And as you'll have seen, it's not that long a novel. So, that doesn't seem like a very good answer to the question of how I got into it.
Were you encouraged on the MA to write a longer piece? Was that part of the
No, question? Actually, that wasn't the, there was no pressure there. That was just very much, to follow your instincts, or that was my experience anyway. It was just really sort of following that, and almost it was more just whenever you tell people that you, or I found whenever I told people that I was writing short stories, I guess especially people maybe who, not bookie type people, they were just like, so when are you going to write something like a proper thing? And in fact, even recently, I've had a number of people who know me well refer to the novel being my first book, and they know that I published another, but it was almost like a book of short stories somehow didn't count, which drove me a bit nuts considering how long it took.
And do you see a natural length for a piece when you start? You talked about sort of getting to 10 to 12 pages and feeling things were going flat. Did, when you were starting writing those, did you feel that, well, this is really, I feel this is 10 to 12 pages worth, but I'll try and push it on? Or is it something you know prior or at the moment of starting, or it's only as you write you kind of gauge the length of a piece?
Yeah, I think fairly quickly I find I can gauge how long something's going to be. I think my sort of experience was that whenever I would have what felt like a sort of a long, like I guess a novelistic idea, something rich and varied and full of different characters and sweeping through the whole of the 20th century or something, anything that had seemed to have big ideas behind it, whenever I would try and execute that, it just completely wouldn't work. The only things that seemed to work and to sort of sustain my interest were things that began in a very small, you know, just a moment or a, you know, perhaps a particular scene or a particular dynamic between two characters. So a very, do I mean micro or do I mean macro? Small level. But I could never write into a sort of a big picture or big themes. And obviously that, I think that is what some people do. They can conceptualize their whole, their whole book in a big way. So I think that naturally lent itself to, you know, producing stories. And in retrospect, I think I should have just been more relaxed about the fact that I was only writing stories. The novel, I didn't sense really that was going to be something longer. I began it in the way that I'd begun all the other stories, which was that I had a sort of an image in my head, which was of this guy who wakes up with his face sort of palsied, one side of his face apparently paralyzed, and that was kind of all I had. And it was just one of those things where I think I got to like 10 or 15 pages and other elements had started to feed in. I had a feeling about where it was set. I had this thing about him being involved in the residence committee where he lived. And so that was very, for want of a better word, sort of organic. Kind of, I didn't have a big idea, and I didn't actually quite early. I sort of knew the very end, like literally the image that I would end with, but I didn't quite know how I would get there. And I didn't have any real sense of what it was about, if you like. I just had this kind of, this sort of hook of this guy waking up like this that somehow seemed interesting. And there seemed to be an impulse to sort of, you know, keep going. And there was a part of me when I got to 10 or 15 pages and I thought it was longer, I was like, yes, please be a bit, please be a bit longer this time. I mean, just a bit, not loads longer, obviously. I think that probably the way that I write is probably not conducive to probably ever writing something very expansive, or most of the stories I've written are, and the novel, I think, are quite sort of claustrophobic, and there's a sort of, you know, a kind of heightened sort of anxious, nightmarish maybe feel to them, which probably is not sustainable over a, you know, it works in a certain, and also involves being kind of in an set in a, almost in an enclosed world. Like the stories are like that and the novel is like that. You know, where the parameters are quite carefully drawn. So I suspect the prospect of me writing something with a big range of characters, with a wide range of points of views over a long period of time, all that feels like a long way from what I... And it's not really a choice. It's just what I have found myself kind of capable of, if you like.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your process for writing that, is it... Do you have a particular process in terms of getting from page one to the final page of a short story or of the novel? You mentioned there that you started the novel from a particular image of this guy with palsy and half of his face. Is that the normal approach? You have an image, and does that image normally come from sort of seeing something around you, or it just a flash of an image through your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it varies a bit, but that is often, I think, how I start. And I guess I don't feel like I have a good understanding of what the process is. It feels very sort of haphazard. Certainly when I was writing stories over quite a long period of time, there was a lot of time spent sort of neurotically walking around the park, trying to think how, you know, trying to make stories and having ideas that didn't work. And I wish I had been able to come up with a process that meant that I could more sort of consistently write, because there was a lot of time spent, in a sense, not writing.
It still sounds like a process in terms of you have an image and then you walk around and try to sort of conjugate the image with
Although often I was walking without an image, you know, just in a desperate hope that something would come to me. There was the desire to write and produce stories without quite knowing the sort of the way into it, and then every so often, and not as often as I would like, something would click. But it was it was a painful process. I mean, I don't want to be the tortured sort of, you know, individual, but I was quite a tortured individual.
And once it did click, would you then sort of rush home, or when you got home, put pen to paper and the pages would sort of fly?
Not fly, no, very slow. But I would definitely have a sense when something would click, and I can remember it with almost each story that I've written. I would know in quite a sort of, you know, quite a gut level, very intuitive, that something was working. And it would be very hard to identify, you know, and in fact, I wouldn't try and identify why that would be. I would just be wanting to hold on to that. So I would then try and follow it up very quickly, because there's always the feeling that whatever that, because it feels very intuitive that, you know, God, you're going to wake up the following day and you're not going to remember, you know, you're not going to have that same feeling. And when I was writing the novel, there are a lot of things got in the way, having a job and all the rest of it. And so there were quite long gaps where I wasn't able to write it, and my fear each time during that period is I was going to come back to it and I would have essentially no clue what it was I had in mind, because I couldn't have. And now, still looking at it, I could try and conceptualize what it is I was trying to do, but it would only be a sort of a stab in the dark. It is quite, for me, it is quite an intuitive thing. But just to answer the question about how the idea, you know, see an image or whatever. In the case of the novel, it was specifically seeing a friend of mine who had Bell's palsy. And going round to his house one day and him coming down the stairs, and I knew that this had happened, but I'd never seen anyone with Bell's palsy. I'd heard about it, and just being genuinely quite sort of shocked at the state of his face, he was in a similar position to me. He had young kids and work, and he was not able to go to work, and I didn't start writing it immediately. But it was very much that sort of lodged in my head as something that might be interesting. And then when I was trying a few things out, and I started with that image, and the first chapter I wrote, which is short, and it's just that moment of him waking up, that came out very quickly. And that was the thing throughout. Whenever I was trying to think, what is it I'm trying to do, I would kind of go back to that, reread that, and think, right, that the essence of the whole thing. Sounds a bit wanky, but the idea felt completely sort of contained in that, and it was just a case of just trying to sort of follow whatever was in that sort of to its logical or possibly not very logical conclusion.
I think that's good to grab hold of when that happens, surely, though, because you'll feel there's an integrity to it, even if you can't quite explain to yourself what it is. That's a good idea to run with, I think.
Yeah.
How does your friend feel about the fact that was the instigating image?
Good question.
He's not living in a wood somewhere in South London.
I haven't seen him for a while. Who knows? He hasn't. Yeah, I saw him recently, and he hasn't been able to bring himself to read it. I think what I didn't quite stupidly, because obviously I spent, you know, since I spent a lot of time living with this idea and what the effect of that might be, quite surprised me when I spoke to him about it, and he said he hadn't read it. Because actually the experience was still, the experience of having Bell's palsy was actually, had been very traumatic for him. And somehow, I hadn't quite registered that, and that he didn't feel like he wanted to revisit it. I don't think he had a problem with me using it. I thanked and apologised to him in the acknowledgements, which I felt was kind of I guess the difference being that he recovered from it quickly. which obviously is not exactly what happens in the book. And so my impression was that it was something that passed, and you know, was no longer had any sort of, you know, difficult associations. But I think in a way it was a difficult, I had taken this idea and run with it and taken it to quite an extreme, which I thought was very different in a sense to his experience. But I think, you know, it was more profoundly affecting for him than I'd realised. So perhaps I maybe shouldn't have written a book about it.
But if that's what grabbed you, and I mean, it's not, the book is not, I would suggest, a study of living with that particular disorder, is it? It's a sort of jumping off point.
Yeah.
How that affects someone's life.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a vehicle for what felt like an interesting sort of, it was a starting point, really.
Yeah, reading it, it didn't strike me as very specific about Bell's palsy as much as I felt the disconnect between the sort of interior and exterior. This guy suddenly, overnight, there's this disconnect with his interior monologue and how everybody else views him. And then it sort of builds this disconnect, and the reader sort of feels there's perhaps missing information or something going on beyond what's literally down on the page, which I think gives the book its sort of energy and sort of draws the reader on. But in terms of how you constructed that, you said you had the first chapter kind of there quite early on.
Yeah.
Did you then sort of write chapter 2, chapter 3 in order, or did you have a lot of editing and changing around of plot lines or different elements of the book beyond that first chapter? Do you tend to write from page 1 to page end, or do you sort of jump around? And
there was, on the whole, it was sort of broadly speaking from beginning to end, but there were bits at which I couldn't quite work, you know, say, you know, whatever, chapter 4, chapter 5, where I sort of knew that I had to get from one point to another, and I couldn't quite see how to do it, or it seemed like potentially a slightly flat part of the story where I knew that the particular things had to happen, but I couldn't see a way to make them sort of dramatic or interesting. So in some, I generally worked from beginning to end, and I'm very slow, and I quite like to have, so I didn't really move on from that first chapter until I had it like exactly as I wanted. I'm not really a rough draft sort of person. Even though I then, once I had the whole thing, I did go back and do more work to it, but I felt like I wanted it as, because so much of what I wanted to do, I felt was kind of sort of caught in that first chapter. I felt like I wanted it to be like pretty much there. And then I did sort of proceed like that, because I felt like as each chapter, I couldn't, in most cases, I couldn't write the following chapter until I knew all of the sort of the flavour of what had come before it in quite a, what's the word? You know, I guess in quite subtle ways, what's, you know, because the book is so much, I think it's so much about sustaining a particular mood and an atmosphere. If the language wasn't sort of pretty close to how I wanted it to be in each chapter, I didn't quite know what the next one, you know, it's a bit like, I feel, I don't know. It's a bit like, you know, having a particular tune in your head and trying to hold that tune. And if I didn't know what had come before, then I couldn't do, you know, then I couldn't do the next bit. So there were definitely bits that were a bit sketchier than other bits as I worked towards the end. I kind of, in a way, to make it feel more sort of manageable, I suppose, I quite quickly sort of broke it into these three parts. I don't know if you'd really call it a three-act structure. I didn't think about that really, but you know, a beginning, a middle, and an end section. And as I say, I knew how the James, the protagonist, I knew what the last image would be from quite an early point, but there was a whole load of stuff between that that I only discovered as I wrote it. There were a few sets, so there's a sort of football scene that happens at the estate party. I kind of knew that was going to be a feature, so I had little points that I knew I was going to hit on the way through.
And scenes like that, did you, as you like you had the sort of broad idea of a football scene.
Yeah.
When you got to it, would you sort of write a draft of it and then close the laptop and the next day come back and read it and go, no, that's not right, throw that all in the bin and rewrite that section? Or would you just work line by line until you're happy with the tone in each line? Or
a little bit of line by, I mean, it's somewhere between those two kind of extremes, I guess. Quite line by line. So, you know, I wouldn't be churning out sort of 1,500 words a day or anything. I mean, more likely sort of 500 words a day, and then spend the following day maybe going back through it. So moving forward at a pretty snail-like
writing
pace.
A little bit, looking back at what happened for the last time you were writing.
And actually, with the football scene, really, I probably was the fastest bit I wrote of any of it. I don't know why. There was some repressed desire to write a football scene. There was some stuff there that was taken fairly directly from a sort of a real incident involving over masculine behaviour on a football field. So I kind of had the, I sort of knew how that was going to pan out. So it was quick and actually really fun to write, because suddenly I felt like I had this sort of vocabulary that you kind of, I suppose, you acquire from watching football, or, you know, not caring that much about football, but this particular sort of language I suddenly found I had an opportunity to use. So it was kind of the funnest bit to read, although one or two people said that bit's too long. So I don't know, maybe I got a bit carried away.
Well, I guess that occurs if you've written from the start up to that point. By that point, you've got a very good feeling about who the characters all are and what's going on there. Like, I'm sure it's very sort of, it all exists, that world, to you very much by that point. And with the starting off with an idea of where you wanted to end up, how smoothly did that trajectory point towards that? Did you find that there were bits where you were just really going way off, things that weren't kind of true to the world of the novel that you needed to then discard, or did it, were you in control enough of the process?
It was compared to my sort of relatively agonized sort of writing experience when I've been writing stories, it actually did come out in a reasonably, I felt reasonably confident most the way that I was writing, that I sort of knew what I was doing and that I was going to finish it, which was a slightly unusual sort of experience. And that's part of why I kind of, I guess I stayed with it, because I did have a sort of a gut instinct that it was going to work out.
Thank you for listening to Unsound Methods.
You can find us on social media at Unsound Methods on Twitter.
Online at unsoundmethods.co.uk.
Stay safe.
I think as I've sort of written more, I've got a bit better, or a bit sort of, I can sort of read those sort of, that instinct. If it's not like, I'm making it sound all very a bit sort of voodoo-y, this sort of,
But it is in a way, feeling. There is that voodoo element. I mean, are you driven, like, are the images, you mentioned the image as the impetus at the start, is that, for most of the scenes, do you kind of have an image before starting it, or is that sort of more a broad, overarching image for the book? Or does the image sort of develop slowly as you're writing?
I don't know, really.
For instance, like reading the book, the section where he goes into the woods and finds this sort of folly or ruin.
Yeah.
It seemed quite visual to me, reading the book. But I wondered, was that something you sort of see that as an image and I need to add that in? Or let's see, he could go in the wood and and it slowly builds up as you...
No, I guess I do have an image of those particular... moment, like I said, at the end, I definitely had, it was a clear visual image of or when he goes into the woods earlier and visits the site of the guy who's supposedly living in the woods. Yeah, I guess I do have an image but in terms of the detail of how that's going to sort of play out or look like, I guess that's the bit that we sort of discover in the writing of it. And the book, I suppose, was made up of a series of those kinds of different images at different moments, and trying to thread them together, I guess.
And do you write notes as a sort of scaffolding for where the plot points are going to be, or is it all within the draft and then like the foundations from that?
There's a lot of sort of scattered notes and things written randomly on post-its, and a lot of, I get as I go through a sort of a high post-it note consumption, just with very random sort of largely incoherent things for, you know, maybe at some later point this will be a relevant sort of a relevant thing. And largely, actually, I don't look at any of it again. It's just a sort of reassurance of, you know, this stuff is there, so if I was to get stuck, just in case. And I probably still got it all somewhere, and still can't bring myself to chuck this stuff out, and I can't think why I would possibly need it at this point. But
do you find any particular places or modes you find you're writing notes more often, or some people we've spoken to say traveling on public transport, or walking around, like you were talking earlier, walking the park? Is Do you have a sort of place or space that you go to and you find ideas or notes come to you more easily?
Certainly walking. I think I spend an awful lot of time. I'm sort of writing in a bit more of a sustained way than I have done for ages at the moment. And I'd forgotten how much I tend to walk when I'm sort of... And I think, I don't know, because of the sort of the brain work involved in sort of... in that, you know, sort of, I'm actually writing a non-fiction thing, but because it feels, I don't know, I guess more intense than other kinds of work, I can only do it for a relatively short period of time, and then a walk, and then back to it. But weird, very oddly, on the way here, and as I was rereading the novel a little bit, just to bring it sort of forward in my mind, I had, which I haven't had for ages, that I had a sudden, because I haven't, you know, haven't really been writing fiction, had a sudden, felt like a flash of what a next novel, which I haven't really thought about, should be. And this will probably, you know, end up like in the sort of the dust of my kind of my iPhone notes section. But the experience of looking back at the novel, I could suddenly see, at least briefly, and I started, you know, making notes on the tube as I was coming, for what would kind of be a sequel, although not a sequel in sort of mood rather than in character. It would have to be quite different because I really didn't want to sort of do the whole thing over again. I think I probably exhausted that particular angle, but it was odd because that hasn't happened for quite a long time.
And how do you, armed with an iPhone, how do you capture that? Those thoughts going through your head on the tube, what do you put down on, I mean, not specifically about the book, but how do you capture it? Is it sort of bullet points or fragments of sentences or two paragraph description in prose or
fragments of very sort of, if you were to read them, unpromising kind of, it would be a bit like this, and you know, that's literally, you know, it would a kind of sequel, same mood, heightened, dreamlike, unreliable narrative, using experiences of, so for instance, I had this, it was about 6 years ago, very seriously ill with pneumonia, and I was in hospital and intensive care, and parts of that would feed into, actually just before I started writing this novel, which I think is not unrelated, but yeah, so the notes just say intensive care, hallucinations, blah blah blah, just things that would hopefully, if I look at them again, would prompt me to have to try and get into the, you know, because the thing is, I guess the fear is always that I will look back at those notes and I'll just be like, what was I thinking? And that's entirely possible, but you know, it's better to have a go at noting it down. Yeah.
And that's not a specific image that this, like on the tube, you didn't have an image or something, but more a mood or a tone that, like, hopefully those notes will transport you back to that tone when you come.
Well, I suppose that in a way there was an image, and the image was of someone who leaves hospital after it's not a clear, you know, very vague image of someone who leaves hospital after a sort of an undetermined period of being ill in some ambiguous way, and then sort of re-enters their life. So as you can see, it's not a million miles away from the novel. So I think there is a question there about whether or not it would be very different to the novel. But I guess the reason I was thinking it was a kind of a sequel would be that James is sort of, you know, he is having a crisis and is leading up to, in a sense, to a further crisis. And potentially this new thing, which I'm definitely talking about too much because I literally had the idea on the way here. This is definitely the best way to kill it by talking about it. But that this would, the situation would be different in the sense this would be after the crisis, but we don't know the nature of the crisis and what it's like re-entering, whether that's his, him or her, a domestic world, which obviously would have quite a lot, the existing novel is, very much about his sort of, I guess, dislocation from his domestic world. So the whole thing might be too similar, but it was just that sense of someone coming out of a situation. It's a little bit unclear, a bit hazy what's happened, been happening in the previous period or how long that is, and the sense that for him or her, everything is slightly altered. And I guess that appeals to, a lot of the stuff I'd written. There is this slight sense of an altered kind of things being a bit off.
And is that from, because you've spoken before about the medical issues that you had and having psychosis in intensive care psychosis, that's the technical term of it. Did you and have you continued to feel that things are altered? You might not necessarily want to talk about this, but is there a big shift when you recover from something like that, but things are still something, the thread is slightly different?
I don't know, really. I don't feel that now particularly. It's almost more that I feel that could be useful for writing for some fiction, in a sort of opportunistic way.
But that's what, that's what the job's about, isn't it? You've got to hop on those things. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you find it has a therapeutic effect, the writing? I mean, lots of people we've spoken to say it's the writing is the only way they know how to work out these problems, or not even specifically problems, but work out issues that are sort of plaguing them or running around their head. Is that something you'd relate to? Writing kind of helps to exercise things, or it's more a separate?
Yeah, I don't really feel it like that. I don't feel that that's why I do it. I think I'm not quite sure what the impulse is, but it doesn't. I mean, maybe at some level there is some working out of the. It's more, I guess, feeling like some of that stuff is useful in order to do the writing that I would like to do. I found writing. I wrote about being in hospital, and I wrote a non-fiction account of being in hospital, and that was quite therapeutic, I think. I think the fiction is a bit different somehow. Trying to, I guess, create something.
Is it a different process when you're writing non-fiction? I mean, you're like, how you approach a non-fiction piece as opposed to a fiction piece, is there any
it feels really different, I think. For me, it feels really different. It's a lot easier somehow. It's just the non-fiction just feels a lot less torturous. Just making stuff up is really hard,
And you're working on something now that's non-fiction. Is that something that's quite... is there a lot of research involved? Is there a sort of a displacement... It's not really a displacement activity, but you know what I mean? Something you can get your teeth into before the real nitty-gritty.
Yeah, there is a certain amount of research, which... I know a bit of research is nice, but I don't know. I'm doing something which I could get really embroiled in sort of historical research, and I think that's not quite... I don't quite want to go too deeply into it. But I do find just the having, for instance, when I wrote about being in hospital, I had a lot of detail sort of in front of me. I did make some notes while in hospital, although they were pretty incomprehensible. But as soon as I came out, I wrote down as much as I could remember. And then quite quickly I started to write it up. And just having that kind of all that detail, which I didn't, it was just there for me. I didn't have to imagine it and just put it all together. It was quite gratifying to write something and not feel And for it, if it just to be more straightforward.
Is there an element in the fiction then of having to remove elements, not being less truthful, but in non-fiction of being able to just put down the facts and those facts speak for themselves, whereas in fiction there's an element of manipulating the reader and trying to remove information that would make things too facile and keep the reader guessing.
Yeah.
Is it reading The Alarming Palsy? It felt that there was something else going on beyond James's interpretation of things. He seems blindsided at every turn by people's reaction to him. Yeah. But obviously, they're seeing things differently. When you wrote the book, did you sort of go back and think, oh no, let's take that out. Let's take that sentence out. So it's giving too much away.
There was quite a lot of that. There was quite a lot of trying to walk the line of saying too much and what needs to, like you say, I guess there's quite a lot of omission, and you know, it kind of has to be this sense of what is actually going on, and you know, what is the difference between what maybe the sort of an objective external reality and his experience of it. Kind of sustaining that balance is difficult, and I guess that, you know, in that case, that's probably one of the things that was really hard about writing it. And whereas, say, the account of being in hospital, I just let it all, you know, put it all down, and I felt like it stood for itself, and because the experience was sort of very dramatic, or felt, you know, very dramatic, and I felt like the details, you know, I didn't need to ham it up, you know, I didn't need to sort of add anything in. I wasn't trying to create some sort of, you know, sense of drama out of nothing. It was all sort of there. Whereas, with the fiction, you're always trying to, I don't know, it just feels like a very fine balancing thing. Is this sort of, you know, is this sort of sense of drama quite working? So there was, I guess, with the redrafting and things, there was quite a lot of...
So you had a complete draft, and then you went back and did a sort of edit all the way through. Did you sort of do many drafts or redrafts, or is it...?
There weren't loads. There were bits that I knew felt a bit sort of saggy at certain points in the middle, that it kind of got a bit slow, or where perhaps I had made things a bit too obvious and I need to sort of kind of take out a bit more to make it, you know, to sort of sustain a sense of ambiguity. There was a question in my mind actually about, I mean, this kind of goes back more to the original drafting of it, but although I had this final image in my head of where it would end up, I wasn't totally sure how extreme the end of the book could become, and whether, you know, how can I take, you know, people who are reading it through all these things, and will they still, you know, as things become a bit more heightened and climactic, how far should I take that? I don't know whether it's okay to sort of give away what happens or not, but
I mean, it's specifically something that people have a problem with in films, don't they? I think it's famously, people are very upset about the particular sort of event that happens at the end of the book. That's the thing. It gets them far more wound up than genocide might, it seems, for some reason.
Which doesn't happen in this book. Yeah. What, in the sense that they sort of feel like that this was not what they had been sort of, or...
I don't know, I think more that it's just a particular kind of sort of cruelty that they feel is beyond the pale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I guess it depends on the expectations of novels or films, but some films definitely, with not putting a spoiler alert and revealing who Kaiser Soze is or something, get people annoyed, whereas other books, films, people don't have the same expectation that there's going to be an ending with the same sort of final full stop, and then it doesn't really matter so much what that ending is, or hearing about it. But yeah, I don't know. It's
I wasn't sure quite whether I could take it into what felt like where you kind of really question quite what's happened, whether people would go all the way with that. And certainly some people I've spoken to weren't quite on board with what happened in the end. And I had debates with myself and a couple of people who read it early on who didn't think certain things should happen.
What stage did you sort of show? Did you have a draft, or were you showing people scenes, or?
I don't really like showing anything until it feels quite sort of, you know, that I've kind of done as much as I can on it to get it to a certain point. It doesn't feel useful to me to get the views of people when I haven't made it as good as I can make it.
And right? At that point, are you fairly open to changes, or if someone comes back and says, yeah, you need to change the whole last quarter of the book, you're kind of like, well...
Would I have been open to changes? Well, certainly, as I say, one person who... one of, like, three people who read it early on wasn't convinced about the ending, and in the end I kept it as I had written it. Would I be open to... In fact, the same person said that I had only, as far as he was concerned, I had only written the first half of the book, and that there needed to be a whole another half, which...
Or a sequel.
Or the sequel.
But. Was that a length issue, though? Because I feel that in... Obviously, publishers want to sell books, obviously, I get that.
Yeah.
But there's a slight myth in my mind about value for money that goes with the length of books. And I just wonder if, when you were writing it and you thought, okay, that's finished, was there a part of you that's going, oh, if only I could find another 40,000 words to shoehorn in there?
Yeah. There was a little part of me that, I knew it was a tricky length, but I guess it's sort of novella-ish length, which I knew was not going to be an easy sell. And I suppose I did give thought to... I think the friend's comment was more that he felt that there was a whole other bit to happen, although I think it was quite mad, really. Mm-hmm. I don't think he was thinking in terms of... the length... Actually, you know, it worked out, and the publishers liked it, and they didn't have any issue with the length. But I think it's not, you know, it's not ideal from the point of view of an agent taking it out and trying to sell it on. I guess I could have made it longer, but it very much felt like that was the length that it was supposed to be, and that any attempt to spin it out for another 100 pages would have completely undermined whatever it was, you know. And I after years of writing short stories, and I guess if I had been going to do that and write a novel without really feeling like I'm not really sure what my point is, but I suppose so far I have stuck to writing the allowing things to be the length that feels right.
It just fits them, yeah.
That fits.
You did have an agent issue, did you, when you sort of finished it? You had an agent who then chose not to represent. Did you, when you took it to Granta, did you take it yourself to them, or did you find another agent?
I had a new agent by then. So the old agent did not care for it, which was a shame after the long period of time that he had waited for it.
how did that conversation go?
It was quite brief. It was all a bit strange because I'd had the same agent for a long time, and ever since I'd sort of signed on with him, the expectation would be that I would write a novel. He liked the stories, and I said I was writing a novel, which never materialised. I was a bit I got a bit carried away in what I was capable of. And then eventually the novel was, in the meantime, I wrote more stories and the stories were published and stayed with the agent, but still no novel. And eventually I sent this quite short novel, sort of 15 years after I originally said I was going to send it, having, I guess, tried his patience. I was sort of under the impression it had been sent out. He hadn't said anything, but because of the way he'd worked in the past, my assumption was that he'd started to submit it, because he didn't communicate very much. just tended to do things or not do them. And then I just got a phone call and he said, yeah, about that. I don't think I'm going to be able to represent it. At which point my stomach sort of dropped out. You know, I'd been working on it for a long time. And I had from the sort of two or three people who had read it, one person in particular whose view I really trusted and who was very positive about it, and I felt just the fact that I had got to the end of it and written it and it had maintained my interest was a sort of sign that it kind of worked. I mean, I'm a bit delusional perhaps, but I had a kind of a faith in it. That but when the agent said I don't think I can represent you for this, I suddenly thought, well, maybe it's a total disaster, and he said there are a few problems. We didn't have much of a conversation about it, but he said there were some problems with it, that it wasn't quite working, and I think I was a bit too flawed to really have at that point I didn't really want to have an in-depth conversation about what those problems might mean. But it was very strange, and I said, so is this, like, it was like breaking up with someone. I said, so are we over? Is this not us? And he said, well, you know, if you write something else, I'd be happy to look at it. And I thought, okay, I think it's over between us.
So how do you regroup from that to find a new agent?
Well, lots of, you know, help from other, you know, I sort of asked around. I got the relatively small number of people that I know who knew, you know, about agents, you know, people who'd published me before in magazines, and I just asked them to suggest, and the agent I have now is just someone who kept coming up, and then one person said, oh, recommended her and said, I'll put you in touch. And then that happened very straightforwardly, and I mean, the old agent had said he thought he couldn't sell it. That's what he said. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't think I'll be able to sell it. And that seemed entirely possible. You know, it's a funny length. It's a weird, you know, it's kind of a weird story. I was quite easy to believe that it wouldn't sell. And then the new agent gave it to Granta, and that was the first people she gave it to. So, so what did he know? So that was kind of felt like a sort of kind of quiet triumph. I mean, I had had contact with Granta before, the thing I'd written about being in intensive care. My editor at Granta had approached me up, another of her writers had showed that to her and she had liked it, and so I had had a kind of a dialogue, I guess, with them before, which is why we gave them the novel first. They were the first people to see it, so it's a real, like a real roller coaster from thinking that this is not gonna, I mean, there's quite a long period of time elapsed, you know, when I get the new agent and everything, but from thinking that this is never going to be published to yes, we definitely want it, and you know, and a good publisher, and so, you know, that kind of happy ever after, I guess.
And was there much editing then with Grant, or was it quite similar?
Not loads.
To the finishing?
Okay. Yeah, it was quite, I think because I had, you sort of through that period where I was ditched by the old editor and things, I had been reworking it, and so it was fairly, it was details. There was an edit, but it wasn't a dramatic one. There was a bit of a talk about the ending, but it was pretty, I think because it was quite short, and you know, if they hadn't felt that it was pretty much there, I suspect, you know, they wouldn't have gone with it, really. I mean, you know, a book that comes out as about 32,000 words, you know, kind of needs to be close to being right. Otherwise, you know, what are you buying?
Thank you to Tom, and thank you for listening to episode 15 of Unsigned Methods. You can find me and my writing at lachlanbloom.com or on Twitter at lachlanbloom.
And you can find me at Jamie Batchin on Twitter or at jamiebatchin.com on the internet.
Remember to like and subscribe wherever you find this podcast.
Please, if you enjoy it, spread the word. Let your writing friends know. It'd be great. Cheers. Take it easy. Talk to you next time. Bye.